The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brad McDonald, and I'll be your host for the program today. It's nice to be back in the hot seat here on live radio. There's nothing like live radio to remind you that you're alive and you're still a human being. I'll be taking one or two programs over the next 2 or 3 weeks for Stephen Flurry. I was in America a couple of weeks ago, and not long after we touched down in the United States, the news came about that a hurricane was brewing off the coast of America in the Atlantic Ocean. I was in Georgia, and you know, we were toward the Atlantic Ocean. We were in the east there, so a lot of us were watching this hurricane that was brewing in the Atlantic. If you turn the television on, there would be news about the hurricane. There was a lot that the experts didn't know about this gigantic storm that was brewing. No one knew exactly when the hurricane would strike America's eastern seaboard. No one knew exactly how much damage it would do or where it would inflict the damage. No one knew just the details of the hurricane. But we all knew, the experts and those of us watching on television, we all knew that it had the potential to be disastrous. And as I mentioned, you know, you'd turn the TV on and the experts would be there, and they'd be evaluating all of these different facets. They'd be looking at ocean currents and ocean temperatures, and they'd be talking about wind speeds, and they'd all be trying to predict what was about to happen, predict what was about to strike the United States. As I mentioned, there were lots of details, but no one knew exactly what would happen. All we knew was that it would be, or that it had the potential to be, disastrous. Now, the reason I mention this is because this is very similar. This is exactly what's happening right now in Europe. A Category 5 political hurricane is forming over Europe. A number of factors are converging to create a major crisis, a massive crisis. Some people are saying that what's happening in Europe will be the greatest crisis since World War II. And just like back there in the United States 2 or 3 weeks ago, just like we didn't know exactly where this hurricane was going to strike, there were some details that we didn't know. But we could look at the factors, and we did know that something was going to hit the America's eastern seaboard. And it did. It caused devastating flooding in the Carolinas and along the coast there. But it's the same in Europe. It's the same in Europe. You know, right now we're just watching this crisis brew. And there are some details that we don't exactly know, but we know that it's bad. It's catastrophic what's brewing in Europe. There's two or three factors that are converging to create this crisis. The first is the economic and financial crisis. We've been watching events in Greece and all of the debt problems that have come up in Europe. There's the resurgence of Russia to the east. But the crisis that is really on everyone's mind right now revolves around the refugees streaming into Europe from the Middle East and from Central Asia. We've explored this subject a little bit at thetrumpet.com in recent weeks. But this really is a transformative moment for Europe. This crisis, the refugee crisis, the flood of immigrants coming into Europe, is more pressing, it's more urgent than the financial crisis that has erupted since 2008. This may be the single greatest crisis Europe has faced since the Second World War. And we need to consider what's at stake here for Europe, for Germany, for other European nations, for the Middle East, and even for the world. And that's what I'd like to do on the Trumpet Daily Radio program today, is just explore some of the ramifications of this refugee crisis in Europe. To begin with, I thought we could just recap the scope of the crisis. In the first 9 months of 2015, the first 9 months of this year, 710,000 refugees have come into Europe. Most of these refugees have settled in Germany, but large numbers have also settled in places like Hungary and Sweden, France, Austria. Some have settled in Italy. Right now, 7,000 to 10,000 illegals, or let's say 7,000 to 10,000 refugees, are crossing the border into Europe every day. Most of them are coming through Turkey. This is a really pressing problem. And over here in the UK and in Europe, this is by far the leading news story. This is the story that everyone is talking about and thinking about. And European leaders are having emergency meetings and holding emergency summits. I think Angela Merkel, Germany's chancellor, was down in Turkey yesterday trying to figure out a bargain with Turkey to have Turkey help them out and stop some of these refugees from Syria making their way into Europe. But despite all the hard work that Angela Merkel and others are investing, there's just no evidence to suggest that the flow of refugees is going to stop or slow anytime soon. Germany, between October and December, Germany is expecting another 920,000 refugees, most of them from Syria. This year, in 2015, Germany is expecting 1.5 million refugees to arrive from Syria. And as I hinted at just a moment ago, there's no signs that this crisis is abating. There's no signs that the flow is slowing down. There's no evidence that Syria is about to become stable and healthy. Some of the facts about Syria vary between the different sources, but there have been 8 to 11 million Syrians, or 8 to 11 million Syrians have been displaced. They've either lost their home or they've been forced to move out of their home and village in this war in Syria. 8 to 11 million Syrians have been displaced. They're without a home, which means they're looking for a home. Right now, there's more than a million refugees in Lebanon, next door to Syria. There's more than 2 million refugees in Turkey. There's 600,000 refugees, Syrian refugees, in Jordan. And there's hundreds of thousands of refugees scattered between Egypt and Iraq and one or two other Middle Eastern countries. The point I'm trying to make is that, you know, a million odd or 1.5 million refugees are going to make their way to Germany and to Europe this year. But there's a lot more coming. There's still 2, 3, 4, 5 million refugees left in Syria. And those people, too, want to come to Europe, or a huge proportion of those people. They want to come to Europe and mainly to Germany. I mean, it's no exaggeration to say that over the next few years, a few million people from the Middle East, from North Africa, from Central Asia, are going to try and make their way to Europe. A few million people, 1.5 million this year, but another 2, 3, 4 million. It depends on the expert. Everyone has different figures, it seems. But there is a consensus that a few million refugees over the next few years will be trying to make their way to Europe. And most of them want to settle in Germany. Now, that's This is a major trend. The resettling of millions of refugees in Germany and Europe. I mean, it's going to have consequences. There will be impacts on Germany, on the other European countries, on the European Union. There will be ramifications. There has to be. You can't witness that many people shifting countries and not expect for there to be some pretty dramatic consequences. And I thought we could just go through for the next few minutes and just consider some of the consequences of the arrival of 1-3 million refugees in Germany and Europe. This is a kind of crisis that the more you think about it, the more you realize how many consequences or how far-reaching the ramifications are for Germany and for Europe. There's the obvious consequences, but then the more you think about it, the more you realize, well, it's going to affect Germany in this way too, and in this way, and in this way. I mean, this is going to affect every German and every European ultimately, not just those Germans who are going to be, you know, living next door to a refugee camp or living next door to a refugee family. This crisis is going to, if it's not already, this crisis is going to touch every European and every German. So the first, probably the most obvious impact the arrival of these refugees will have is just the economic cost to the host countries. Someone has to pay for the food. Someone has to pay for refugee housing. Someone has to pay for the medical care of these people from Syria and elsewhere. One estimate, I think it was performed by one of the local German governments, one of the local governments in Germany, but one estimate said that each refugee costs about 12,000 euros per year. That was the cost of accommodation, food, health care, and the administrative expenses. So if you multiply 1.5 million refugees by that 12,000 euro figure, you know, you're getting in the neighborhood of 18 billion euros. So the refugees are going to cost Germany 18 billion euros this year. And a lot of experts say that 12,000 euro per refugee figure isn't accurate, that in reality it costs a lot more. The Kiel Institute for Global Economics did a study, and they said that the arrival of the refugees will cost Germany 45 billion euros annually. It's going to cost Germany 45 billion euros each year. That's not a small amount of money. I mean, we see today when we talk about global finances and national debt, and you know, we use that billion figure so easily. We even talk in trillions when we talk about the United States. But 45 billion euros, I mean, that's a lot of money. Well, that's getting close to the cost of some of these bailouts for Greece. That's a lot of money. And as you know, you've been watching the news, Germany and Europe aren't exactly a picture of health. They're not exactly just overflowing with money that they can use to pay for these refugees. Someone is going to have to pay for this. Someone's going to have to pay the $45, $50 billion every year for the refugees. It's not going to be these poor refugees because they're arriving with nothing. Who's it going to be? Are some of these European countries going to have to raise taxes to help cover the cost of hosting the refugees? That's not going to sit well with the German people or the French people. Another ramification or another consequence of this inflow of refugees is the possibility of radical Islamist terrorists coming into Europe with these crowds of people. 90-95% of these refugees are Muslim. And the big question is, how many Islamic State terrorists have infiltrated these refugee camps? I'll just read a quote from The Express here in the UK from September 10th. It said, this article said, one refugee admitted to helping more than 10 trained ISIS rebels infiltrate Europe under the guise of asylum seekers. He said, I'm sending some fighters who want to go and visit their families. Others just go to Europe to be ready. So this refugee crisis has been quite an opportunity for the Islamic State terrorists. How many? I mean, even if it's 10% of the 1.5 million refugees, what if 10%? Maybe that's too high of a figure. What if it's 1% of that 1.5 million figure? What if 1% are radical Islamist terrorists? Is that 1,500? 1,500 refugees? In September, German authorities arrested an ISIS recruiter working in a refugee center in Stuttgart. So you have all of these refugees, and the German government is setting them up and feeding them and clothing them and taking care of them. And then you have these ISIS recruiters walking around with pamphlets, preaching little sermons in these refugee centers, trying to turn some, one or two, maybe three, just a few of these people into ISIS terrorists. I watched a video recently of a refugee child. He must have just been 13 or 14 years old, and he'd just gotten off a train, or he was getting onto a train. He was in Europe, and he was crossing his throat with his fingers, you know, that gesture, throat-slitting gesture. I saw another video a couple of weeks ago of refugees streaming off a train, and there were two or three ISIS flags, the black flag of ISIS. They were waving that as they came off the train into Austria. That's got to worry Europeans. That has to worry Austrians and Germans. But how many terrorists have infiltrated this, have come over into Europe with all of these refugees? Another consequence of all of these refugees flowing into Europe has been a substantial increase in criminal activity. Statistics show that crime increases when refugees arrive. I suppose that's not it's not very politically correct to say that, but it's the fact. It's a fact. Crime rates increase in towns and villages and cities where there are refugee camps. I'll just read a quote here from the Gatestone Institute from October 11th. Asylum seekers are driving a surge in violent crime in cities and towns across Germany. German authorities, however, are downplaying the lawlessness, apparently to avoid fueling anti-immigration sentiment. With more than 10,000 new migrants entering Germany every day, observers warn that crime in the country is sure to snowball. Experts say that many of the migrants will never be integrated into German society because they lack even the most basic skills to find work in the country. Some are warning of the establishment of parallel societies across Germany in which shiftless migrants are sustained by a volatile mix of taxpayer-funded social welfare handouts and crime. There are facts now showing that in the towns in Germany, in the villages in Germany, where there are high refugee populations, criminal activity is going up. There's reports of men stalking German women. There's reports of shoplifting becoming increasingly common. There's reports of assaults, more and more assaults. There's reports of refugees breaking into people's homes, sometimes just because they want food or shelter. Criminal activity is increasing. How long are the German people going to put up with that? How long are the native Europeans going to put up with that. Another consequence of the arrival of all of these refugees is a rise in tension and conflict between native Europeans and the refugees. And again, the facts show increased tension, increased conflict between Germans and the refugees in Germany. The Economist recently had an article where it made the point that at one anti-refugee rally, protesters were chanting, "We will do to you, the refugees, what Hitler did to the Jews." So there's a pocket of the German population, and that pocket is growing in number. But there are some Germans who are looking at the refugees, and, well, that just to quote The Economist, who was quoting a protester, he said, "We will do to you what Hitler did to the Jews." Think about that. That really is pretty chilling. The Local, a German paper on October 10th, said, In the shadow of Pegida, we have seen a doubling of acts against asylum homes and attacks against refugees. So attacks against refugees and refugee centers are going up. The Germany's Interior Ministry recorded more than 490 attacks against refugee centers this year. Last year, for the entire year of 2014, there were 150. This year, there's been almost 500 attacks on refugees and refugee centers, and the year is not even over. This past Saturday, a candidate for a mayoral candidate in Cologne was stabbed in the neck by a far-right extremist. This German man, had been unemployed for a few years, and he was really upset because he thought that the hope of him getting a job was going down, that he was losing hope because he was looking at these refugees, and he was concerned that these refugees were going to take away a job that he could have. So he went out and he stabbed this woman who was running for mayor. She was a social democrat, and her views on the refugees were pretty liberal. She was open to the refugees coming to Germany. In Sweden, on Saturday, a school that was being prepared to house 80 refugees was burnt to the ground. Someone didn't want the refugees in their town, so they burned the school to the ground. Another consequence of the arrival of these refugees is we're going to see the rise of far-right political policies and far-right political parties in Europe. This is already happening. Around Europe, far-right political parties and political views are becoming more and more popular. Last Saturday, there were local elections in Vienna, Austria, and the Freedom Party, which is a far-right political party, won 32% of the vote. It was the best result it's ever had. It's the same in Switzerland. Switzerland yesterday held parliamentary elections, and those elections were won by the Swiss People's Party. They won 65 of the 200 seats, or 30% of the national vote. And the Swiss People's Party is a conservative, anti-immigrant political party. It's staunchly nationalist. And it won on the back of this refugee crisis. 50% of voters in Swiss elections cited the immigrant crisis as their chief concern. And the Swiss People's Party was the party they thought would solve this solution. In Sweden, polls put the Swedish Democrats out front. 5 years ago, the Swedish Democrats won 5.7% of the vote in parliamentary elections. Today, they own 25%, more than 25% of the vote. And, you know, don't let that name, don't let the name deceive you. Swedish Democrats, that's the name of the party. And it sounds pleasant enough, I guess. But it's a far-right political party. It's an anti-immigrant political party with ties to neo-Nazism. Some of its members are neo-Nazi. Some of its leaders embrace neo-Nazi views. And that political party now in Sweden owns 25% of the vote. In France, the Front National is the third largest party, or the third most popular party, and it's expected to make huge gains in local elections. Its leader, Marine Le Pen, is the front runner in the upcoming presidential election. It's a similar story in Denmark. The Danish People's Party, again, a right-wing party, just won its biggest share of the vote ever. It's the same in the Netherlands. You've probably heard about Geert Wilders. He's the leader of the Freedom Party in the Netherlands. And the Freedom Party is a right-wing, anti-Muslim political party. And Wilders, he's the guy with just this pretty impressive head of blonde hair. He's really a pretty interesting character, and he's not afraid to say some pretty controversial statements. But he advocates a pretty confrontational approach with Islam and with Muslims in the Netherlands. And he's come out and he's warned about, quote, the Islamic invasion that is taking place in Europe. He's warned that the Dutch security, culture, and identity are under threat. And his political party now, is the most popular political party in the Netherlands. This is a huge trend and a really important trend that we need to be watching. The message is loud and clear. And that message is that if you want political success in Europe, move to the right. If you're a politician or if you're a political party in Europe, and if you want to be popular, which they all do, then move to the right. Express concern about the refugees. Advocate protectionist plans. Talk about defending the borders. The final consequence, and this is not, these six consequences, this isn't all of them, but this is the final one that I'm going to talk about today. The final consequence is how this crisis is really causing the EU to ask some pretty fundamental questions about its existence. This is an existential crisis for the European Union. Europe, the EU is fracturing over how to handle the arrival of millions of immigrants into Europe. European leaders are divided on how to handle this crisis. The leaders in Western Europe, they have more liberal views. They're more open to accepting refugees. But in Eastern Europe, in places like Hungary and Serbia and Croatia, in those countries, the leaders, they're erecting fences. They can't handle the refugees and they don't want them. The Schengen Agreement is—I forget when the Schengen Agreement was formed. It was about 30 years ago now, but the Schengen Agreement is an agreement between 26 or 27 EU countries to not have border controls between the countries. It's an agreement that is built on the principle of open borders. So when you travel around Europe, because of the Schengen Agreement, you don't have to show your passport when you cross from Austria into Germany or Germany into France. And this agreement was designed to promote the flow of people between these European nations. And the free flow of people between EU nations is really part of the European Union's DNA. The free flow of people, open borders between EU states is fundamental to the nature and the character of the EU. It's a big part of why the EU came into existence. But right now, that fundamental pillar of the EU's identity is being debated. Nations in Eastern Europe, they're instituting border controls. Germany and Austria are talking about, you know, what they can do to, you know, at the same time follow EU law and you know, not just destroy this fundamental pillar of who the EU is, but at the same time they want to control the refugees flowing into their countries. There's a lot of conflict and a lot of tension between EU leaders about how to fix this problem, and it really does threaten the unity of Europe. But think about all of these ramifications, and there are so many more. This refugee crisis is changing. It's changing the psyche of Europeans. It's making Europeans feel less safe. The continent is less stable. There's more uncertainty. There's more instability. There's more tension. The whole continent on a national level and then on the EU level too, the whole continent is in a state of flux, a state of change. And remember, this is where two world wars began. There's a lot of history that we have to consider during this period of just enormous change and uncertainty in Europe. Okay, we'll go ahead and take a break now. And after the break, we'll come back and we'll talk a little about the exciting subject of German politics.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. The relatively new science of archaeology, the digging up and study of the material remains of man's past, has confirmed without question the historical accuracy of the Bible. Solid, documented evidence, apart from the Bible, confirms events and persons that at one time were known to us only from Scripture. The Bible is real, and you need to pay attention to it. Call now and request your free copy of The Authority of the Bible. This lesson, which comes from the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course, blows the dust off your Bible. You will learn how to mine the treasures buried in the greatest book on earth. You can discover its secrets and enrich your life today. For more information, please visit thetrumpet.com. Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program.
Welcome back. Let's now, for the last part of the program, let's talk about the refugee crisis and the impact that this is having on politics in Germany. This really is precipitating a major upheaval in German politics. Politics in Germany have been fairly stable for 10 years or so. Angela Merkel, Germany's chancellor, has had a firm grip on the Germany's leadership. She's been very popular, but that is changing, and we're about to witness, it really does seem, we're about to witness some pretty dramatic changes in German politics. And it's remarkable how quickly the change is taking place. The German people, just in the past couple of months, have really gone from being willing to accept immigrants, to accept refugees, to being very, very cautious about letting these refugees into Germany. At the start of September, only 38% of Germans said that the refugees, or the large number of refugees, made them afraid. At the start of September, 59% of Germans said that Germany was taking on the right number of refugees, or that they should take on more. At the start of September, only 33% of Germans said that their country should take fewer refugees. But look at the polls 1 month later. So 1 month later, at the end of September and the start of October, polls revealed a major change of heart had taken place in Germany. 1 month later, 51% of Germans said that they were now in fear of the large number of refugees coming into the country. 59% of Germans said that they believed Angela Merkel's decision was a mistake. In 1 month, there was this dramatic change of heart, and the German people now, a majority of German people, were concerned by the arrival of these refugees, and they were upset at Angela Merkel and her liberal policy when it comes to Germany's borders. And Angela Merkel's popularity has suffered. During September, her popularity fell 9% to its lowest level since 2011. I mean, it's still relatively high. I think it's still in the low 50s. But that's a pretty dramatic fall in popularity. A 9% fall in 1 month for Angela Merkel. That's something, if you were Merkel and if you wanted to remain chancellor, that's something that she is going to be concerned about. Meanwhile, some of the anti-refugee politicians in Germany, their popularity is going up and up and up. Horst Seehofer, he's the leader of the CSU, the center-right political party in Bavaria. His popularity has increased 11% over the past couple of months. But it really does look like Germany's chancellor, Angela Merkel, is in trouble politically. Here's a quote from Die Welt from last week. "The chancellor is walking on thin ice. Merkel believes the nation can manage the crisis, but this belief is rapidly vanishing in the country." Another quote from October 15th from the Agence France-Presse. "Many Germans, who in the summer greeted refugees at railway stations, are losing faith as thousands keep coming daily and improvised refugee centers are bursting at the seams, including tent cities exposed to below zero temperatures as winter approaches." The Bild is one of Germany's main newspapers, and it's traditionally been a big fan of Angela Merkel, but it's beginning to lose faith, and it's beginning to turn on Merkel. Here in Britain, The Times wrote this last week. "For the first time, pollsters are asking Germans whether the once unassailable chancellor should quit, and her party is in panic about falling ratings as complaints mount from constituents." On Saturday, The Telegraph echoed this point. Here's what The Telegraph said in an article from this past Saturday. "Even those who supported Angela Merkel's decision to welcome hundreds of thousands of refugees last month are starting to worry that Germany cannot cope. Across Berlin, in the Chancellor's office, Mrs. Merkel has her own problems to worry about. As the country struggles with the influx, opposition to her decision to let the refugees is growing by the day. For the first time in years, Europe's most powerful leader faces a threat to her authority." Here's what one German parliamentarian said. "We still support the Chancellor, but this migration crisis is taking us to the brink. If this goes on for another few weeks, I fear the system will collapse." This really is casting German politics into the oblivion, or into a period of instability and lots of uncertainty and unknowns. At one of the recent Pegida protests in Dresden, protesters were carrying around the gallows. They were carrying around, you know, this long pole with a noose on it, with Angela Merkel, a depiction of Angela Merkel's head in the noose. So while Angela Merkel's popularity is waning, the popularity of some of the far right parties in Germany is increasing. This is really something that we need to watch. And even some of Merkel's faithful followers, politicians in her own party, are starting to express serious concern, and they're starting to voice their concern to Mrs. Merkel. On October 7th, 34 regional officials from the CDU, that's Angela Merkel's political party, they wrote her a letter, and they warned that Germany's resources were nearly exhausted and that she needed to change her approach to the refugee crisis. Since then, hundreds of CDU politicians have signed the letter. See, even Angela Merkel's political party is beginning to have serious doubts about her leadership. The Wall Street Journal recently described a meeting that occurred between Angela Merkel and CDU politicians. So these politicians are part of Angela Merkel's party. Ms. Merkel had come to the eastern town on Wednesday for a conference with members of her Christian Democratic Union. But what was supposed to be a gathering among friends turned into a blistering indictment of her chancellorship. One after another, the delegates at the Globana Trade Center, town councillors, regional party grandees, and simple members took turns to criticize her open-door refugee policy. You have failed. You don't know who's coming. You don't know how many are coming. You don't know how many are already here. This influx must end. That's what one of the politicians, CDU politicians, told Angela Merkel. How long can Angela Merkel continue like this when her followers are losing faith, and they're losing faith quickly? How long can this continue? Now, the party that I think we really need to watch, or there's a political party in Germany that I think we really need to keep an eye on, and that is the Christian Socialist Union, or the CSU. We need to watch the Christian Socialist Union. This is one of the main political parties in Germany. This party is based in Bavaria. It's a Bavarian political party. Bavaria is down at the bottom of Germany. Its border is with Austria. Bavaria is really the soul of the German nation. And the CSU is a center-right political party. And for years, it's been a key ally of the CDU, Angela Merkel's party. But the CSU is now really starting to question Angela Merkel's leadership. The leader of the CSU is Horst Seehofer, and he's been very, very critical of Angela Merkel. He's made some very strong statements about the refugees and Angela Merkel's open border policy, and he really wants to curb the flow of refugees into Germany. Now, you can understand his position. He's the leader of the CSU there, and the capital, the headquarters of the CSU is in Munich, which is only about an hour from the border with Austria. So Horst Seehofer seized firsthand these refugees getting off the trains and pouring into southern Germany. But last week, Horst Seehofer threatened to take Angela Merkel and the federal government to court over its refugee policy. He threatened to take his ally to court because of her liberal refugee policy. His popularity ratings have soared in the past few weeks, as has the popularity of his political party, the CSU. Seehofer has hinted that if Merkel doesn't change, if she doesn't start becoming a little more conservative, in her approach to the refugees. He's hinted that there's going to be a political crisis between the CDU and the CSU. I'll just read a quote from a professor from Dresden University. He said that Seehofer, the premier of Bavaria, could use this crisis to demonstrate that Bavaria needs a strong leader. See, that's what this is all about. Germany is experiencing a crisis of leadership. The people disagree with what Angela Merkel is doing with the refugees. They're not happy with her, and they want a change in leadership. They want someone who is capable of recognizing the consequences of millions of refugees arriving in Germany and then dealing with those consequences. There's a massive opportunity here for the right man to come along and lead Germany through this crisis. We need to keep an eye on Horst Seehofer. Keep an eye on the CSU, the Christian Socialist Union, down there in Bavaria. This party, this political party, and just this region of Germany really has a rich legacy in German politics. The CSU and Bavaria, this is where Adolf Hitler had his political ideology shaped and molded. This is where National Socialism, Nazism, established its roots. This part of the country is staunchly Catholic, very conservative. And this really is an area of Germany that we need to watch. I'll just read a quote from Stratfor, and it's talking about Bavaria. And how Bavaria is—it's been a petri dish for radical political ideologies in Europe. Stratfor says Bavaria has often been a center for new political experiments in Germany. In times of deep social upheaval, this involved embracing extreme positions. I mean, is that what we're witnessing now? Germany is experiencing deep social upheaval. Are we, you know, is Horst Seehofer and the CSU, are they conducting a new political experiment? We need to be watching this. It's an interesting thought. And then this Stratfor article goes on to show how Nazism really grew out of Bavaria. Munich was both the founding city and the spiritual center of the nationalist socialists. In 1923, Munich was the stage of Adolf Hitler's first attempt to seize power in the so-called beer hall pushed. The city had a special place in the Nazi pantheon, and in 1935, Hitler declared Munich the capital of the Nazi movement. See, this area, Bavaria, really has a rich history. And as Stratfor said there, it has a history of being the center for new political experiments, a new political movements. Are we about to see a new political experiment emerge from Bavaria? Well, that's something that we need to be paying attention to. And you can stay tuned to thetrumpet.com. Here at The Trumpet, you've no doubt heard us talk about two individuals. The first is Edmund Stoiber. The second is Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg. Both of these individuals hail from Bavaria. Both of these men were prominent leaders in the Christian Socialist Union. And both of these men, Edmund Stoiber and Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg, even today are working closely with Horst Seehofer and are intimately involved in the affairs of the CSU. A couple of weeks ago, the news broke that Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg, He was joining Seehofer's advisory team at the CSU, and he was going to help the CSU prepare for upcoming elections in Germany over the next 2 years. Gutenberg, this article says, Gutenberg will advise Seehofer's Christian Social Union Party mainly on foreign policy, defense, and technology. The team he is joining will organize the CSU's local, national, and European election campaigns, including the 2017 federal elections and the 2018 national elections. So there really could be something interesting brewing here. Angela Merkel's popularity is tanking. The CSU's popularity is rising. Seehofer's popularity is rising. And these two men who we've been drawing attention to, Mr. Flurry and the Trumpet, have been drawing attention to Stoiber and Gutenberg for 10, 15 years in the case of Edmund Stoiber. These two men right now are forming stronger attachments to the CSU. Impeccable timing on their part. This is something to watch, and we're here to help you watch these events. We're here to help you watch events in Europe and to watch German politics and to understand it. And we're going to continue to do that. But big things are happening in Europe. Big things are happening in Germany. And this refugee crisis really is precipitating a transformational moment in Europe. And really, it's precipitating changes that will affect all of us. And this is something that we all need to continue to watch. Okay, I'll leave it there. Thanks for joining me, and I will talk with you next week.